Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things United. I'm your host, Nick.
And I'm Jamie.
Yeah, we're between Manchester and Glasgow today. I think you've not been on the podcast for a while, have you, Jamie?
No, I've not. I actually broke my finger a couple of weeks ago and, don't know, just not been as positive as I was for a wee while, just with a couple of injuries and stuff like that. And I was kind of disappointed because we've actually played all right.
Well, yeah, you missed it. The last couple of podcasts were the positive ones. They're the ones you wanted to be on. So, unfortunately, you're back here for a more negative one. We are recording a couple of days after, unfortunately, losing to Fulham. I was at that game. So we'll be talking in depth about that match. We'll also be looking at a lot of the... There's been some big interviews with Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who since the last time we recorded has now officially announced his shareholding of Manchester United. So he's done a couple of interviews. There's lots of quotes doing the rounds. So we'll try and dissect some of that stuff over there. And then we'll, look ahead at some of the matches coming up. And we did briefly touch on them on the last podcast. Wasn't sure if we'd managed to get this one out with there being two matches this week. You know, mostly we're only playing one match a week. This is the first week in ages where Fulham, we're recording this on Monday. We're then playing Nottingham Forest on Wednesday night away. And then we go away to the Etihad. So, yeah, two massive away games. FA Cup, the only thing we can win. And then obviously City in the league. But look, let's start with the Fulham game. As I say, unfortunately, Jamie, you've missed the positive podcasts. We were on a very good run. We were unbeaten this year, several wins in a row. But yeah, it's all come crashing back to that kind of up and down roller coaster season we've had with the 2-1 loss to Fulham. I mean, look, what were your immediate takeaways from this game? Yeah, did you think we were unlucky? Did you think we didn't deserve any more? Where are you at?
No, I didn't think we did deserve a whole lot more, to be honest. It was weird, really, to go from kind of Friday morning, really optimistic, really thinking, you know, if we can beat Fulham. And we were all positive, good run of games, good run of half-decent performances as well, and thinking, right, win this Fulham game, put a marker down, and then it's a big test in the FA Cup, last chance of silverware, and then a huge game in the derby. To then get the news about Hoyland, it was a bit of a sucker punch on the Friday afternoon, and I kind of immediately was worried about where were the goals going to come from then, because Hoyland wasn't just... He was scoring it almost at will and was just on absolute fire. Any kind of half chances he was scoring, he was chesting them in, doing all sorts. But beyond that, it was his other parts of his performance. His hold-up play was excellent. His playing people in down the channels, especially in the Luton and the Villa games, was excellent, causing a real problem. And you just knew as soon as he was out injured, we just don't have anybody else to do anything like that in the team. And yeah, so immediately I was a bit concerned about goals.
Yeah, I mean, look, that is the big... That was same for me. You know, we were... Yeah. Relatively happy going in to this match. I mean, I had said I've been saying for weeks and weeks since that window that, look, we need reinforcements. Our squad is lacking. And, you know, I think the club, I don't know whose decision it was, whether it's Erik ten Hag, whether it's the club, took a massive gamble on players coming back from injury. And, you know, we're now basically down to one fit fullback in Diogo Dalot. And we've got no striker at all, because Højlund is our only proper striker. After that, you know, and then that was the kind of talk before the match, wasn't it? Who's going to play up front? And first people talk about Rashford, which is, you know, not an ideal scenario. Forsen started being chatted about quite early on. You know, he was thrown out there quite early on as a kind of option. He had come off the bench a couple of times recently. He came off the bench for Højlund against Wolves. And after that game, I think some people started saying, yeah, well, maybe he's going to be our emergency striker option. And yeah, look, that's the way the game went. He's thrown straight in at the deep end for his first start for Manchester United. I was pretty shocked. I mean, I love seeing academy players get a chance, but I did not expect him to get this start already. You know, I could understand him coming off the bench or whatever, and he's only had very brief appearances even from the bench. I mean, we did see a bit of him pre-season, but for him to start a game like this was big. And a lot of people were expecting him to start up front, but it didn't really exactly go like that. He was moving around a fair bit, but really he was mostly playing on the right-hand side, which says a lot about where is Antony at the moment, you know, way down the pecking
order. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah. I mean, for Ten Hag to have spent $80 million on him, that was his man. Okay, we all know he's not good enough. And you only need to check the forum, newspapers, Twitter, whatever. Everyone knows he's not good enough. But to actually have a situation where there is then an opening up front, we need to shuffle the pack, and he doesn't get a look. I'm not saying he should play, because I don't think he should, but for that to be the official line, that he then just does not get a look in, is absolutely damning. Not just for us looking in, that's damning from the manager, because that's his player. He brought him from Ajax, and as I said, there was a chance to actually shuffle the pack and do something, and he just that was never really going to be a serious option, and so it proved. I thought Forsen looked promising, but it's a terrible situation to be thrown in, especially when you're not a striker. To be just—I know he didn't really work out like that, but to just be kind of chucked in at the deep end, as you say, and just being like, right, okay, go up front and basically make something happen because we don't have anybody else. That's tough on any player. Never mind a young academy lad who's just starting to make his way in the game. That's really tough. And you're right, more or less immediately, Forsen was kind of being talked at as, yeah, that's going to be who plays that game in that position. But I kind of half thought McTominay might play there, just because he's a big, strong guy. Okay, he's not a forward, we know that, but he has been a goal threat. He has scored goals. He can hold the ball up.
He's our top scorer, isn't he?
I thought that might be a better option, at least just to start with. Somebody with a bit of presence up front. I mean, yeah, again, he's not a striker, so it's not ideal. But I genuinely thought that may be more of an option. And then at least that way, you're leaving Garnacho on the right, where he's been playing well, and Rashford on the left, where, okay, we've got issues with how hard he works, but that's his best position, and he has been playing a bit better the last few weeks. And it's just really unfortunate Højlund getting injured, and then it just we don't have that much strength and depth, so then immediately the whole front line's getting shuffled. And I just thought maybe playing McTominay through the middle up front might have been better, just to leave players who were fit in the positions they were playing well in.
No, and some people might think that's your Scottish bias coming through.
Well,
but
maybe. Yeah, I mean,
no,
it might be.
But it's not. Listen, I would have played Scott McTominay up front for exactly the reasons you say. That it was the least disruptive option. You know, we'd had a settled... It's the thing we talked about in the last couple of podcasts, that finally, for the first time this season, we'd had a kind of settled front four, even front kind of six, with Canet Miro, Mainoo behind Bruno, Rashford, Højlund and Garnacho. Now we had to shift everybody around. One injury, as you say, Garnacho goes from right-hand side to left-hand side. Rashford goes from left-hand side to central. Forsen comes in on the right. Fawcett and Rashford were switching a fair bit. As I said, I was in the stadium, and at the start, I was kind of watching closely, and I wasn't sure myself who was playing up front, because for the first kind of 15, 20 minutes, they were definitely moving around a fair bit between Fawcett being central, Rashford went out right. But as the game went on, it then became clearer that Rashford was going to stay more central and Fawcett was going to stick more towards the right. Fawcett, he made a really energetic start. He was really trying to go and win that ball, press players. Then he kind of dropped off a bit. And I think, you know, he wasn't clear himself where he was supposed to be. And the problem, of course, is that he doesn't have any kind of understanding with, say, Diogo Dalot behind him.
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously lacking there completely. And on the same on the left side, because Victor Lindelof, you know, we're focusing a lot on up front. But our other major, major issue is that we only have one fit fullback. So we have Victor Lindelof playing at left back, which is an awful, awful option. You know, I said on the last podcast that I think is a major error that we let Reguilón go back to Spurs. And not necessarily that he was amazing, but if he was going back, we had to bring somebody else in.
Yeah, exactly. I just assumed that as soon as the kind of break clause was announced and he was going back, I just assumed, right, well, you must be getting another left back then. Because Malassia is not there. He's just been injured since the end of last season and just wasn't available. We all know, right, everyone likes Shaw and I like Shaw and he contributes a lot to the team, but you cannot rely on him. That's just been proven now, fitness-wise. You can't rely on him. And to begin into the second half of the season, you've already said, with one guy up front, and I did see Ten Hag saying in one of the press conferences that he was kind of pushing for another striker in January, but it was just made clear to him that funding's not there, the money's not there. But I don't know how much I believe that. If you can afford Reguilón for 6 months, you've then exercised the break option, sent him back to Spurs, surely there must have been the space then to either go and get a striker, but more specifically, a left back, because it's absolutely needed. And now, with Wan-Bissaka being injured, you're literally down to one fit fullback. And Lindelof, you could see it in the last two games, really, where, especially against Villa, as soon as he came in, any kind of impetus down that left-hand side was just gone. There was just nothing. Because he can't play that position, he can't get up and support the attack, he can't help Rashford. Rashford obviously doesn't really help on the defensive side either, but Lindelof just doesn't have pace either, so any guy running at Lindelof will get by him on the outside, get by him on the inside. So that's just a huge issue. And to have gone in, say, the space of 3 weeks, where you had really key players in Martinez, Shaw, both coming back, as well as, say, Casemiro in midfield, to have lost two of them already and now Hoyland's out injured, it's a massive, massive issue, and it's really going to cost us, certainly in the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, and look, to me, it's not a surprise. I said this while the window was open. I said, we surely have to be bringing somebody in. And not only did we not bring anybody in, we got rid of a load of players.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about FFP, but off the wage bill, we've sent the likes of Palestri, Van der Beek, obviously Sancho left.
So Hannibal
several
as well.
Players have gone. And all right, maybe we are still paying some of their wages, but surely there should have been some money freed up from these players going out. There's definitely been some kind of loan fees coming in for sure. I know a couple of those players like Hannibal, like Alvaro Fernandez, we've definitely been paid something for them for these kind of loan fees they've gone out for. So to bring nobody in, to me, it's almost negligent. Like, you know, I don't know, like I say, as you said, Ten Hag kind of did make a couple of comments saying he wanted to bring players in, but it was quite clearly said to him that he wasn't getting any players in. So that, for me, it was madness to let players go at this point. And I said it several times. I said, look, it's a major, major gamble to be going into this season and hoping players are coming back from injury. And we saw, while we had a full team out, we went on a good run. We got some good results back in that kind of Champions League battle. And now all of a sudden, two or three players out and we're kind of back to what was going on earlier in the season. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Kind of like I say, yeah, I told you so. But yeah, that's where we're at. Still, I think it was a big call to stick Omari Forsen in over here. Yeah. For me, all right, none of us want to see Anthony because he's been awful the whole season. But Ahmad, for me, Ahmad Diallo should have played this game. He should surely be ahead of Omari Forsen in the pecking order. And as I said, I don't mind our academy players getting shots. And I do like the fact that Mainu's come through, Garnacho's come through, Kambawala's had a chance. So yeah, I'd love to see that. And I'd love to see these guys. But for me, I still think it was a bit of a strange decision from Ten Hag. And, you know, he obviously got hooked just after the half-time kind of break in the end of it. But it wasn't until later in the game that Ahmad came on. And I thought when Ahmad came on, he looked better to me. He's had more first-team football.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, he had a really good year on loan last year at Sunderland. And he has had another loan. He was at Rangers for a bit, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He didn't play that much over there, but he has had a lot more exposure to first-team football. And for me, he should surely be higher up in the kind of pecking order than Omari Forsen. Not that I've got anything against Forsen. For those who don't know, like I say, he's 19-year-old, coming from the academy. When I saw him getting linked with playing up front, it did surprise me because I'm not somebody who watches every youth game, but I always keep an eye on who's playing, who's scoring. And, you know, there's good threads on kind of Red Cafe where you can keep updated with things. And he's never been touted as a centre-forward. He wasn't like the centre-forward for the youth team. He's always more attacking midfield. It's where he's played before. And yeah, in the end, that's the way he's worked out. That's where he was going to play. But he's never been one that loads of our fans have been saying, listen, this guy is going to be amazing. This guy is definitely going to make it. So as I say, it is a slightly strange one that, but for whatever reason, Erik ten Hag has taken a liking to him. He's given him his chance. And he wasn't terrible at all. In fact, if you look at the stats, he at least didn't give the ball away. He didn't get involved that much. He's at like 21 touches. But he's 94% pass accuracy. But he was mostly playing safer than you'd hope a kind of attacking midfielder would do. He was not wanting to give it away. He didn't see him that much trying to take anybody on. As I said, there was a couple of times he was doing the pressing and all, but it seemed like he was just doing a safe job, and we needed a bit more at that point, for sure. So yeah, look, nice to see him, and I hope he does still get more chances, but I think from the bench, he's not a player who's ready to start. If it's not, you know, we don't want to see Anthony, but I definitely want to see more of Ahmad, that's for sure.
Ahmad's the one, yeah. And, I mean, it's not even just the fact that he played well on loan at Sunderland last season. Even, like, he was chucked in at the deep end in the AC Milan game in the Europa League a few years ago and scored. The only, like, scored for us. He's been a goal threat for Sunderland. He didn't do that well at Rangers, but I think he got two in his first two. And then, to be honest, he was kind of scapegoated a little bit for the Old Firm defeat Rangers had. I think it was against Ange Postecoglou's Celtic, and that was it. He never really kind of got back in. But it's still really, really surprising to me that he's barely played. I mean, I don't know what the issue is. I don't know if Ten Hag just doesn't fancy him, doesn't think he follows the coaching guidance as well as he would like him to. I honestly don't know what it is, because he's got, as you said, he's got more first team experience than players that are getting picked, and we need a goal, and he's proved he's a goal threat. So I just don't understand why he's not playing more, especially now when the opportunities are there.
Yeah, it did seem like the perfect opportunity. And then again, you look at somebody like Facundo Pellestri, who's doing pretty well out on loan in La Liga, and say,
again.
Oh, would he have not got his chance now with these couple of injuries? But anyway, I think it's because Ahmad was fit that Pellestri was let go. But then, yeah, he's not high up
but
there.
Then exactly. Then that's it's just like you would just like him to get a chance. But
yeah, these are
not,
the questions.
You're never going to know.
I mean, going back to the match, we started this match very badly. Like I said, I was in the stadium. I wouldn't say the crowd was confident because of those injuries. All the pre-match talk was about, oh, who's going to play up front? We haven't got any fullbacks. So even though we'd been on a good run, I think everybody was a little bit worried about this game, just because they knew what kind of form we'd been in this season when players were out and weren't really expecting that different. But still, it was Fulham. Fulham, who actually have like the joint worst away record in the whole Premier League. So, you know, almost inevitable. But yeah, they've come away with a win over here. The first half, we started badly. We came into it a lot more later in that first half. So yeah, the first kind of 15, 20, we were terrible. And again, it's because players were shifted around. You know, we'd lost that momentum. We'd lost that consistency with so many players in different positions. And you could see that. But yeah, towards the end of the first half, we were starting to make a bit more of it. And, you know, it was an evenish first half. Went in at 0-0. Nothing that exciting. But he made these changes early in the kind of first half, in the second half. And some of it was forced because Casemiro basically had an injury, right? It was a head injury.
Yeah.
It was quite a long kind of stoppage and he had to be taken off. And then it was a bit strange that he was, if he was going to take off Fosu-Mensah, why he didn't do it at half time. But he does it at this point. I guess he was waiting to see exactly what was happening with Casemiro before making this move. Scott McTominay comes in, as he has done often lately. And then Christian Eriksen, who we've not seen that much of, also comes and makes a difference. But it was a big miss in our midfield. Straight away, you could see the problems in midfield once Casemiro went off. Even if Casemiro hasn't been in the greatest form, and you know, he's been a kind of yellow card risk every time, but he is still that experienced player. He still brings us a lot just from positions and as well to help somebody like Kobbie Mainoo of where to be, what to do. It is the perfect player to be around. So then all of a sudden, again, everything gets shifted around because Fosu-Mensah comes out, Bruno goes out right, Scott McTominay's at kind of 10, and you end up with a midfield of Mainoo and Eriksen that just didn't really work at all. And then, yeah, within 10 minutes, we're basically one down. But it's the standard story of, like, set pieces, not clearing things, and, yeah, I don't know how many times we're just going to get punished again and again and again in the set-piece situations.
I don't get it either, because the goal we concede, it's just a cross thrown in between that gap of the near post and the edge of the 18-yard box, and I think anybody who watches Man United knows that is absolutely a situation we struggle massively with, whether it's a corner, whether it's a free kick out wide that they're just going to throw in right on top of the defenders, whatever it is, that is absolutely a massive weakness for us. And we've just let the set piece coach go to Minnesota, is it? In America.
I saw he was linked. Is that done? I didn't know it was done.
Yeah, yeah, I think all he's right. left now. But I don't know how you have a set-piece coach, and I know that's not his only job, but if you're in charge of that, and that's one of your responsibilities, I can't fathom how, in whatever it is, the 18 months he was there, the 12 months he was there, you just do not improve. That just every single time you play a team that's got a half-decent option from a corner or out wide that's going to throw a decent cross into the box, they're just going to create an opportunity every single time. And it's not even so much the first one either, it's like the fact the ball falls right at their feet, and to be fair, Bassey smashes it in past Onana. Onana's got absolutely no chance for how hard he kicks it, but it's so frustrating just to see that same type of goal go against us again. It's As you said, it's inevitable that teams like Fulham are going to come to Old Trafford, and okay, they had loads of chances from open play as well, but that is where they're going to get the best chance against us, is set pieces, and we just cannot improve. And I'm hoping with all the changes that are planned, all whether from the coaching staff and what have you, that they're going to seriously look at it and bring somebody in that's going to actually have an effect and make us a bit harder to break down from set pieces. I was listening to like Roy Keane, for example, talking about Man City when he said about how strong they are, and you rarely feel like you get a chance against City. But he then went and said, but the other thing is they don't concede set pieces. They just don't. They don't concede goals from set pieces. And Liverpool are the same, and Arsenal are the same. And it's really frustrating that we've just never, ever got better at it.
Yeah, it is a major issue. It goes back years before Ten Hag, and I don't know what's wrong with our players. Like, you know, this one should have been cleared we had enough chances, enough opportunities for players to be clearing this out. Just, I think Ten Hag said it before, players need to, you know, be fighting for this better. It's just a lack of kind of fight and aggression at the right times.
It's lackadaisical. That's exactly what it is. It's just lackadaisical defending, where it sounds like just so cliche, but literally the other player wants it more than you do. And that's why they get the opportunity. And it's so frustrating.
So yeah, we started talking about all the depressing stuff. We will take a quick break there and come back with more depressing talk about the rest of this game.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So yeah, we were just saying, we end up 1-0 down yet again, a set piece. Fulham then make a couple of changes, we make another change. As I say, Diallo finally comes in, Ahmad, for Kobbie Mainoo. There's not that much of the game left at this point, you know, it's the 80th minute. Fulham made a couple of changes, Adama Traore comes in as well. Andreas Pereira went off, and he actually got quite a kind of round of applause from the Old Trafford crowd. You know, we still kind of do acknowledge all our old players. So, yeah, it was nice to see Pereira. Even though we were 1-0 down, our crowd still gave him a bit of a clap as he went off. But, yeah, Diallo comes in. We were pushing. You didn't necessarily feel like this goal was definitely coming. We had some kind of half chances. Harry Maguire actually, as I say, often... Not only do we concede goals from set pieces, we never seem that dangerous from them. No. But Maguire should have scored from a corner, like, before he actually did get that equaliser. But yeah, look, once you hit that 89th minute equaliser, Old Trafford obviously is going crazy. You only think that we're going to win at this point. You can't think of anything else. You know, the worst case scenario is it's going to be 1-1. You're only thinking about winning. And especially the board goes up and they say there's going to be another 9 minutes. And, you know, nowadays it's not that rare. But you think, like, we've got so much time, we've got to go and win it. And we had chances as well. That was the killer thing. We even had chances within that 10 minutes. But, yeah, look, it didn't go that way. Naive again on the break. And we end up conceding a goal that just reminded me as well of that equalizing goal that we lost to Wolves.
Yeah,
you know, people forget about
it. Was,
yeah, you forget about it because we ultimately won that match. But it's so similar. And it just seems so naive of us. And to lose the same kind of goal yet again, it seems that our team don't learn. So I don't know. Do you put this on the team? Do you put it on the manager? Where's this kind of at? When the same things happen again, you know, you can make a mistake once, but when you make a mistake twice, then heads must roll, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Harry Maguire, just to go back to him, like, the one he misses is a sitter. It's actually the easier chance than the one then. Bruno then has a shot at Leno, and it's more of a mistake from Leno, really, to kind of push it just straight back towards the kind of middle of the box. Maguire does really well to kind of read what's going to happen and scores. And as you said, 9 minutes go up, and immediately you're like, oh, well, hopefully the usual happens here. We get a goal, and... yeah, it's been a poor performance and we get away with it. But for Fulham to have a throw-in near their own byline, throw it over the top of one of our players, Traore then takes a touch and just knocks it by Maguire and then just runs past them like he isn't even there. As you said, it was a carbon copy of the Wolves game where... for some reason, every defender seemed to have went up for a corner that was just unnecessary. You were winning. It was in stoppage time. Just just read the game. Like, I don't really put that specifically down on management, because I can't imagine Ten Hag is specifically saying to the players, in added time, if we need a goal, all of you advance into their half so that if they get a break, we're screwed, basically. I can't see the manager saying that. So I think it's a bit more of the players having to take responsibility, and instead of just panicking and thinking we need to get flying forward as fast as we can with as many players as we can and put pressure on them basically in their half. As you said, we see the goal a month ago or whatever it was, where we send four defenders up for a corner for absolutely no reason. We lose the ball on the edge of their box. They run all the way up the park and score. That was a carbon copy on Saturday, where one throw-in goes over a player's head and that's it. Fulham are literally in because they've got Adama Traore, who's fast as anything, runs by Maguire, and you could see people breaking their neck to get back, but it's too late by that point because you've already got three or four players advancing and they score. And I do put that one on the players, because there's no leadership at all. There's no taking responsibility in the sense of reading the element of there's not much time left. Yeah, we need a goal, but at the same time, we don't want to be caught cold on the break, so just pull players back into position a little bit. It was so bad. It was so naive. And it was, again, we've seen it multiple times this season where that goal was scored against us. And that's where it comes down to. Is that the manager's fault? I don't think it is. I'm more putting on the players and not taking responsibility. But then it does become a deeper thing of, is that them not taking responsibility? Or is that them just not listening? Because the coaching staff could be telling them, saying, if we're in this situation at the end of a game, this is how we want to play. And I can't imagine they're telling them to do what they've done in the Wolves game, what they've done in the Fulham game. So if that's the players just kind of ignoring the manager and panicking, charging up the park, looking to try and score the goal, then that's equally as bad, because that just shows they're just not listening to whatever the instructions are. I don't really know specifically who the fault is with, but I do put a lot of it on the players.
Yeah, I mean, for this goal particularly, experienced players should know when you just take one for the team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you take a dirty foul, you see those players are going. And in this, if you watch this back, the player who should have done it was Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
And I know that's not his style of play, but he's experienced enough to know at that point in the game, you take a tactical foul, even if you're getting a yellow card, it's fine. Stop that attack, get players back and do it. So if you watch it back, the player who really needed to do that in this run was Christian Eriksen. Harry Maguire had a bit of a chance to do so. To be slightly fair to him, he was on a yellow card, so I don't know if he had in his mind that is a red card risk for me. It possibly, but that's what has to happen. That's how that kind of goal is stopped, really. You know, it happens all the time. And you see teams like City, they play these tactical fouls all the time. They know exactly when to do it to stop the other team. It's like the dark arts. People talk about the beautiful game and the possession style, but they're absolutely drilled into tactical fouls of when to do them, how to get away with them. And yeah, we just seem too naive. It's the kind of thing we're totally lacking. And then, as I say, there's a lot of blame that can be going on to like Erik ten Hag for things at the moment. And, you know, you've not been on for a while, so I don't know where you're at with these things. We obviously have the poll on Red Cafe at the moment. It's always open for like changing. At the moment, we're at 57% want Erik ten Hag out. 43%, which includes me, by the way, are still saying we'll stick in there for now. Imran's been pretty clear lately that he's virtually done with Erik ten Hag. What's your opinion on it?
I agree with Imran. I mean, I wanted ten Hag in. I watched the way he played at Ajax and thought, yeah, I would like to see that kind of structured discipline, but attacking football come in. And I thought it would suit the players. Again, I'm not. It's the same as multiple situations with other managers. I don't put the entire blame on him. I just don't. I look at a lot of players who I just think aren't good enough, don't really care enough, and need to be moved on. But I just don't see any improvement I understand there's a lot of injuries and that does account for a lot of it. But at the same time, I just think there's no real structure, there's no real plan, there's no real anything. Even when players are back fit, we're still consistently facing teams and it's dozens of attempts on goal. It's constantly under pressure. The midfield's so easy to play through. I mean, again, there was players moved around, so there's some context required for Saturday, but it's almost as if it's like one pass and you're in. Luton, one pass and they're in. Villa, one pass and they're in. And it happens week on week on week, and you're sitting thinking, we're playing one game a week at the moment, and there should be plenty of time in training to be working on this, to be working on a structure, to be working on a plan. Not necessarily even just trying to make attempts on goal, just be a bit more solid in how you're going to stop the other team playing. And this is months now. I mean, we've played better and in games we've had, say, even 20, 25 minutes of games where we look really good and we look really excellent on the front foot. But this then leads into another point, is if a team then scores a goal against us, even if it's against the run of play, like Luton did, we're so brittle that as soon as the other team score a goal, we take so long to recover. We take about 40, 45, 50 minutes to recover. And that can't happen. That cannot be happening 18 months in consistently, that you play really well, you get two goals ahead, and you're just sitting watching it thinking, right, okay, stay in control, potentially get a third, and see this game out. It just doesn't happen. Whether it's, as I said, a goal, and this is in the Villa game, the Luton game, the Fulham game for is another example where a team scores a goal, we're so brittle, there's no confidence almost at times that we can even hold on to a 2-1 lead, that we can just kind of shake it off and get on with it. And the other team just suddenly goes into the ascendancy for the next, as I said, half an hour, 40 minutes, and just makes chance after chance after chance. And that is ultimately on the manager, because everything like that, the confidence, the motivation, everything comes from him. And that's not improved. The plan of attack's not improved. The structure's not improved. And I don't see it, even with players getting back fit, I just don't see it improving under him. I don't see him making us better. And with all the changes that are happening right now and are going to happen in the summer, I think he should be moved on. And to be honest, I think he will be moved on. I think the new owners will want a clean slate and they'll start again.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, we are coming off a run of four Premier League wins in a row. We were undefeated this year so far, 2024, seven games undefeated. I mean, if you'd been on one of the last two podcasts, would you have said you were Ten Hag out?
To be fair, I think I would still be in the same position, because that's the point I'm making. It has been better and we're better on a good run. But I've said this today on the forum in the Ten Hag out thread, where I said, I'm tired of watching us get played off the park by teams that we should be better than. So I've already said there was the Villa game where we started really well, we get into a lead, and you're just kind of watching it thinking, right, if we get two or three up here, that's it, it's done. We ultimately don't. They come back into the game, and it isn't just a kind of one-off. It consistently happens where the other team comes into it, they get loads of chances over the next X time period, and they put us under real pressure, they score, they potentially then go and get another one, they don't. And then we have had, eventually, the resiliency to come back. But that brittleness that's lasting for such a long period, we've got away with it against Villa, we got away with it against Luton, we got away with it against Wolves, because even when Wolves scored the penalty to make it 2-1, again, the same thing happened. For ages, we just went completely to shit. And the other team then just starts making loads of chances. Newport County, like, we were so much better than them. They score a fluke goal, but that's what I mean. It's a fluke goal that really any other team should just be able to just shake off, get on with it, start again, get right back on top of them. And we don't. You just invite pressure all the time. And as much as it's an unbeaten run, there's so many instances in that unbeaten run, but we just don't look convincing. We just don't look to have any strength about us. And that's where I keep mentioning this brittleness, that we've got such a glass chin that if somebody scores a goal or just does something against us, even if it's totally against the run of play, we get so rocked back by that and take so long to respond that we've been lucky in certain games that the other team hasn't scored two or three and then we've been rocked right back. But then, look at other games in the start of this season, we have been caught cold and other teams have done it. And that's where I've always been a bit wary that, yeah, it's a good run. We've played well at times in those games, but I was always really, really wary that this softness was still about us. And ultimately, I think that's what's going to cost us big time this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm still willing to give Ten Hag till the end of the season to see what he can do. As I said, once we had a fit squad for only like literally a few weeks, or, you know, mostly fit squad for a couple of months, our results were a lot better. We were playing better football. We were scoring more goals. And now we lose two, three key players. And yeah, it all goes to shit again, which is not that surprising, really. But I mean, the one really damning stat that's been doing a lot of the rounds this week has all been about the amount of shots we're conceding on a weekly basis. There was this table of how many times Premier League teams have conceded 16 or more shots in a game this season. And we're joint worst in that table with Luton, with Sheffield United, even worse than West Ham. You know, 14 games this season, we've allowed the opposition to have 16 or more shots against us. Just for comparison, Manchester City have only had that twice this season and Arsenal, none at all. So, yeah, just show you a big comparison. I mean, at the same time, shots doesn't mean a lot. That's why I actually do like XG, because that's more talking about quality of chances. You know, if a shot is coming from nowhere, going nowhere, then it's absolutely meaningless. And if we look at this game particularly, like Fulham on paper have had 17 shots against us, which sounds pretty bad, but their XG is only at 1.1. So they're actually lucky to get two goals from it. And in fact, on XG basis, we should have won this game. 1.96 versus 1.14 is showing that we were kind of unlucky, but in a way, Fulham really did defend a lot and didn't try to play that much after they went one up. So
You say that, right? And obviously, I never saw most of the game. I just had to kind of settle for the extended highlights and stuff like that. But even from memory, you know, Iwobi has the chance where they basically cut right through us in the first, I don't know what it was, the 20th minute or something like that. They cut right through us all the way through. Iwobi puts it by the post. There's then another chance and it's Pereira puts it just by the post. Muniz, for them, hits the outside of the post after a kind of turn and hit. Pereira gets it out wide, turns inside, hits it, and it's a good save from Onana. I mean, that's just the first half. And that wasn't exactly chances like miles wide. This was ones, as I said, that hit the post that's literally a foot wide, maybe not even a foot wide. Good chances Onana saves. And for comparison off the top of my head, the only one genuinely I can remember in the first half is, for us, Dalot does really well, drops his shoulder, hits a really good shot, and he's unlucky, it hits the foot of the post and goes wide. But I know what you mean, because you can't just look at shots, because shots could mean anything. They could be shots that go 10 foot over the bar, miles wide, and what have you. But just from memory, I don't want to kind of just keep flogging the point, really, but it is frustrating, because I can remember myself having watched the games, and then, as I said, seeing the extended highlights. It's a lot of shots that are either on goal or just wide or even hitting the post in the bar. And it's got to change. It really has to change, because it's just killing us. It's killing the confidence. And it's as I said, I don't want to keep going on about it, but it's so frustrating to just see it just happen week in and week out.
Yeah, and to be fair, look, I was in the stadium. I saw this whole game. I know it wasn't officially televised in the UK still, because, you know, this 3 p.m. Saturday blackout is still a thing. I was actually surprised to see the XG that far in our favour from this game. In the stadium, people were not happy. The first half performance was average at best. Second half was bad. And, you know, I think maybe a draw was probably a fair result from this game. We didn't really do that much to be saying we should have won it. It was a poor performance. It was disjointed. A lot of poor performances in midfield. I'm not going to go that much into detail on it because I want to talk about other stuff. But yeah, Bruno was poor again.
Yeah.
I said on the last podcast that I think he's really not been getting that much criticism, whereas other players have been getting a lot, Rashford in particular. And yeah, he deserves it from this game. But yeah, Bruno, I think, has been getting away with a lot, especially as our captain who plays every minute. He was terrible, gave the ball away a lot, 73% passing accuracy. Only one player was worse than him for passing accuracy, and it was Scott McTominay, who came on and did not offer much at all. I'm afraid your Scotland hero was not didn't make it happen. Didn't make it happen.
Nah,
didn't get that.
Week.
And you know that, but that is Scott McTominay. It's not a surprise, but he's been getting the goals that make the difference. So you know you allow it, and it was the same. It used to be the same with Bruno. You didn't mind if he had 70% passing accuracy if he was pulling out an assist, making those key passes, getting a goal, and he just hasn't been recently. So then you have to talk about that he becomes a liability when he's giving the ball away one out of three times.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, it was a bad game. I think, as I said, I think a draw was probably a fair result, but we've won a couple of games recently that we could have drawn or lost. So that's the way it goes. You know, you get the rub of the green one way and then you lose it the other way. I think that'll be enough for this Fulham game. We'll take another quick break there and we'll come back, talk a lot about what Sir Jim Ratcliffe has been saying this week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at chumbacasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at chumbacasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We're back for the last part of the show. So yeah, look, that was depressing talking about another loss after a good run. We should say it is a good run. You know, it is just one loss at the moment. On the positive side, and a lot of the positive feeling has been around this ownership change. Since last time we recorded, it has all finally been officially announced. It was last time we kind of more or less said it was official, where there was a few things still had to happen out in the USA with the stock market and some shareholdings. It's now officially announced. Sir Jim Ratcliffe owns 27.7% of our shares. And he's done various interviews. He did a big interview with MUTV. He did another one with the BBC. I think he also did a more kind of group press conference to various journalists at the INEOS head offices in London. So there's all sorts of quotes that have been doing the rounds. And yeah, I've watched the whole MUTV thing, also listened to the BBC. That was very interesting. There's some big quotes that came out of here. I mean, first of all, I'm sure you, like most of our fans, are now positive about what's going on around the club. You know, I was worried before kind of Sir Jim came in, but now I feel a lot more comfortable with what he's doing. He's saying all the right things. Already the changes are happening at CEO, looking at Dan Ashworth now, hopefully coming in as kind of sporting director. And these are good moves for me. It's exactly the kind of thing I wanted to see. And at the moment, it's all just talk and it's all just PR, but he's saying all the right things. You know, how are you feeling about Sir Jim in these early days?
Really, really positive, yeah. It was always a bit, you didn't really know how it was going to happen and what the overall plan and structure was going to be, just with, as you said, nothing was really coming out before last week when it was all eventually made official. But how quickly they're moving, the whole wanting to get Dan Ashworth in as soon as possible. Yeah, I know there's a lot of kind of drama around that, especially from the Newcastle end at the moment. But making moves to get him in, looking to get a few other different people in different positions, whether it's alongside him from a director's point of view, a head of recruitment. It's everything that we've all been talking about for say the last 10 years anyway, where it's been obvious that too much responsibility and emphasis has been placed on the manager. The manager's had to basically be the coach, but then also the head of recruitment and the sporting director at the same time, which has obviously been too big a job, and it's not been properly managed. So to see they're not wasting any time, they've already chosen the new CEO, looks like they're going to get their man for the sporting director, already making moves elsewhere, is very, very positive. And I watched the MUTV one as well, and I just came away from it thinking, you can understand why he's a billionaire. There's no bullshit about him. It's totally direct in how he speaks and how he addresses everything. There's no fluff around anything. He says his mind, which I quite like. There's not really any... Well, I think it was like the whole Qatari question where he poked a bit of fun about that.
A little bit of a joke about does Sheikh Nasheem actually exist?
You know, it's a bit of personality. I quite liked it. I thought, yeah, okay, fair enough. I imagine a lot of people maybe think the same thing anyway. And yeah, very, very positive. And even the thing around the stadium, I've been totally on the side. I don't know about you, because you obviously go to all the games and that. I was always on the side of, I would like to see Old Trafford just redeveloped rather than a new stadium. But even then, listening to his rationale and what they're thinking, I can see the benefits in it. I can understand why they're looking at that. And it's just nice to be in a positive place where, okay, the team has had a bad result on Saturday and there's a lot of issues. But in terms of the future, it has just been really good for a change to just have some positive influence, some positive thinking. And it is exciting to just see where it takes us over the next, say, year to 18 months.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I say, I actually like what you're saying, even though I was somebody who wanted Sheikh Nasheem to win, mostly because he was trying to buy the whole club and I wanted to see the back of the Glazers completely. And also because he was talking about clearing the debts, building a new stadium. That's why I wanted him. And I'm also very certain that he does exist. there's articles in the Financial Times about who he is, what companies he's been involved in. He's been a director of massive banks like Credit Suisse. So he does exist. I think he's a pretty kind of private person, which is why all this stuff does the rounds of fake Sheikh. But yeah, I still like the fact that Raptor comes out with this kind of billionaire banter. I like it. You like to see that kind of thing. And I think it looks like he wants to have a bit of fun with this. You know, that was the thing. We weren't sure, what is he coming for? Is it just like for the kind of status of being around United? Is he looking for profit? Like, we know the Glazers have only really ever been interested in how much money they can make here. But I think at his age, he is really looking to leave a legacy, to have a bit of fun as well. When people talk about the Chelsea thing, obviously he has been a Chelsea season ticket holder. He did try and buy them. But yeah, he is from Manchester. He obviously grew up a United fan. And I think, yeah, he feels like he wants to play Football Manager at this point. And sometimes you're like a bit worried about billionaires coming in. You know, you can see a big mess made at Chelsea lately, for example.
Yeah.
But we've been doing things so badly, you just say, look, anybody coming in with new ideas is surely going to be an improvement. And the thing I really liked is to see him going in, bringing in Omar Berada from City, going after Dan Ashworth from Newcastle. We still have to see how that pans out. He was pretty clear in the interviews saying, we will not be paying 20 million for this. And, you know, Newcastle need to be reasonable, and it doesn't make any sense for Dan Ashworth to be doing nothing for the next year. But yeah, Newcastle could still. I wouldn't be that surprised. The Saudis could easily dig their heels in and say, you know what? You're going to sit on your gardening leave. We'll pay you to do nothing rather than let you go to Manchester United.
And that's kind of the point as well. It's like, well, okay, they might dig their heels in, but then we'll be happy to say, well, he's our man. We're happy to wait for him. You can pay him for the next whatever, fine.
The thing is, we won't wait a year for him.
But one other thing he said in the interview that I really liked was when they kind of broached the idea of getting Dan Ashworth from Newcastle, and they were talking about the gardening leave, he steamed in with an answer talking about, well, they're not going to do that because they can't do that in the UK, they can't do that with employment law in the UK, they can't do that with this, that. And I was like, do you know what? Fair enough. he's putting a threat down, basically saying, okay, try and do whatever you want, but this isn't FIFA that govern this. This isn't UEFA that govern this. This is employment law in the UK. This is relating to. So if we have to take this to the courts, fine. We'll take it to the court. And I kind of like that he's got that about him. As you said, he wants to leave a legacy. He wants United to be better. He's brought guys like Dave Brailsford and Berada in already. And okay, Berada's still on gardening leave, but you know what I mean? He's still brought these people in. He's getting started now. He's not really wanting to waste any time. And I just really like that. I really like the attitude he's got to it. And it just seems like he wants to get the right people in places now. So come the summer, when we've seen the recent reports about we can spend more money this summer and not be as in tight a hole as we have been with regards to profit and sustainability, he wants a really good start to the summer. And yeah, I just really like his attitude.
No, it is good to see him. And I said it on the last podcast as well. He's quite clearly going out there to shake things up very quickly. You know, to go in and take somebody from Manchester City, to go in and directly target the golf clubs, Abu Dhabi, Manchester City, Saudi Arabia, Newcastle. Obviously, he's already gone face-to-face with Qatar. He's doing it on purpose. He's very clearly saying, you know...
And
His nickname is Brexit Jim, right? People talk about his politics, and yeah, it's something I didn't like before because, yeah, I'm not a fan of Brexit. I'm very anti that. And he was somebody who pushed that through very strongly. So it wasn't something I liked. But at the same time, I kind of like the way he's moving around and saying, yeah, look, I am the Manchester guy. I'm going to do it the British way. And he's gone after the kind of golf money and whatever. He's done it on purpose for sure. I like what he's saying. There is still massive question marks, and the big one is the stadium.
Yeah.
How is this going to be funded? Our club is still £1 billion in debt. You know, I saw this question come up on Red Cafe. People saying, "Oh, what happens to the debt now that he's taken over?" Well, nothing. It still stays there. We're still servicing that debt every year. It's not a massive, massive worry. Like, we do make enough money to deal with it, but the problem is if you've got £1 billion of debt, where's the money, £1 billion for a stadium, coming from? And he obviously can afford this. He's a very, very wealthy guy, the richest British guy by far, one of the richest people in the world. But somebody who only owns 27% of the club is not going to spend £1 billion on buying that club a stadium.
So,
these things still need to be sorted out. He was asked the question, and this was a very important question to me, like, is there a plan for you to become the 100% owner of Manchester United? And he said no. He said, you know, we have not talked about that. The Glazers kind of made it clear what they wanted. I did make that offer. He said, you know, I did want that originally and made that offer. But the Glazers, you know, we worked out how we're going to go forward. And I'm happy in this position where I am in charge of the sporting side. And we'll see what happens in the future. But he made it pretty clear that there is no clear plan for him being the full owner of Manchester United, which is a disappointment for me. But we have to see. It doesn't mean it won't happen, but there's no clear kind of plan towards that. And I think some people were hoping there might be. And then something that ruffled up, I know a lot of opposition fans are up in arms about this, when he was talking about the stadium, he was talking about making it a kind of the Wembley of the North. Yeah. And he's saying, you know, that we should get government funding for that, basically. I saw a lot of opposition fans are going absolutely crazy about this, going, what, you think I'm going to give my tax money to Man United having a new stadium?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually totally agree with him that the North should have its own great stadium. It's rubbish that, you know, if United play... Last year, it was United Newcastle in the Carabao Cup final, and we all had to trek down to London for that final. 100,000 people going from the north down to London. In the past, these things did move around more. FA Cup semi-finals were all over the country, but, you know, lately they've all been at Wembley. I mean, I know you're even more northern than us up there in Scotland, so I don't know if you have any view about this or you don't care about Wembley or whatnot.
No, I agree. It's even the same. It's not obviously on the same scale, but it's the same here because the national stadium's at Hampden, and we've got slightly different issues where, to be honest, Hampden is it's okay, but it's not really fit for purpose anymore. And there's always been a lot of discussions about, well, maybe we should have it. It doesn't really work because obviously Celtic and Rangers are the two most successful teams. But say there was a semi-final and Celtic or Rangers weren't in it, does it have to be at Hampden? Could it not be at Ibrox? Could it not be at Parkhead? Could it not be, if it's two Edinburgh teams, which sometimes it is, could it not be played at Murrayfield? Because it's a huge stadium and it's a very good stadium.
Yeah, and in the past, finals were at Old Trafford. You know, yeah, semi-finals exactly, were always at Old Trafford, I remember. And it used to be great. You'd go to different places around the country for FA Cup semi-finals. And yeah, I think England should move around the country too. You know, England shouldn't have to play all the time at Wembley. They should move around. So from that side, it does make sense. I do think it's pretty cheeky for him to start talking about tax money and government handouts. In the way, though, he's not...
It's a huge brass neck to say that, like, to be like, oh, we'll ask the government, we'll see if they fund it. And I mean, I've got pals that immediately message me after it saying, what, nah, absolutely no chance, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, obviously, but it was still quite funny just to see the brass neck on him even kind of raising that point. But the point about a stadium in the north does absolutely stand, because when I used to live in Darlington and I saw teams like Middlesbrough and all the way down south, specifically for their cup final, Newcastle travelling down south, whether it was for a cup final or a cup semi-final, it's a lot of movement, especially as you said, if it's two northern teams, if it's two teams, one from the northeast, one from the northwest, if there was a more northern venue for them to go to, that would definitely be of more of a benefit.
So we'll see. And like, his point is that if we do make this whole new stadium and it's more of something for the whole north in general, he's not actually asking for money for the stadium, but he's saying the whole area around it, regeneration of that whole section of kind of Trafford Park, that's where he's asking for some kind of help or whatever. But it's early days. That's the problem with this as well. It's very early days. It's going to be years. They're only just talking about looking at things. Gary Neville apparently is involved in some of these talks. He's actually a big real estate property guy around Manchester. Some people might wonder, why is he asking Gary Neville anything? But yeah, Gary Neville owns Hotel Football, which is right outside Old Trafford. So yeah, he does have experience in property and real estate around there. So yeah, why not? I mean, yeah, just going around some of the other things, as I say, coming to the end of the show. But there were so many things he was talking about that was interesting to hear about. He did also touch on the Mason Greenwood situation, which is always controversial. He basically said, look, we've not made any decisions on it. It's something we'll look at. We'll look at the facts, not the hype. And yeah, we'll make a decision from there. But he did also, of course, say that the values of the club are very important, which they have to be. So yeah, we'll see what happens on that side of things. I did like as well the fact that he came out and he said he'd admitted that he'd made mistakes with Nice, because that was another worry for me before, that his track record at his other football clubs, Nice and Lausanne in Switzerland, were not good. We're not good at all. I mean, Nice are having a better season this year than they have done. But he said, look, we have made mistakes and we won't make those mistakes again. So in a way, he's kind of learned and he's coming to, maybe it's a good time for him to come in. You know, he's understood things around football in general. Because, you know, that was a worry for me, that he did not have a good track record at all at his previous football clubs. So yeah, we'll see from there. As I said, at the moment, it is all just talk.
Yeah.
And talk is cheap. We have to see what actually happens. And, you know, it's not going to be until 1 year, even 2 years down the line, that we actually know. And I mean, he said himself, he kept saying this. It was his favourite quote throughout all these interviews. He said, we want to walk to the right solutions, not run to the wrong solutions. Yeah. So he said, we're not going to do anything quickly. And he talked about 2-3 seasons. He said, they asked him, when do you think you can be challenging for a title? And he said, realistically, we're looking at 7 or 8 windows. So he's saying, you know, 2, 3, even 4 years till he really thinks we're where he wants us to be. I mean, I don't think we should have to wait that long to get a kind of title challenging team. You know, even last year we were third in the league and we come second even recently. So yeah, we shouldn't be that far off, but yeah, we wouldn't expect things to happen overnight. He did of course talk about knocking Manchester City off their perch, quoting old kind of Ferguson days, We don't even got that much time to talk about it because we're coming to the end. But give me your predictions for these next two games coming up. We've got Forest Wednesday night. By the time this comes out, it might even be Wednesday. But we did preview these two matches on the last podcast. If you didn't hear the last podcast, go back to that and you'll hear a bit more in-depth previews of the Forest game and Manchester City. But look, give me your quick predictions, Jamie, for these two games. Last time we were feeling relatively positive. Now, obviously, we're feeling less positive. But go on, two predictions. Forest in the cup and Man City away.
I still think we'll win against Forest. That's I don't think it'll be pretty at all, but I'll go 2-1. Blind optimism, but the City game, I'll say 3-1 City, but in all honesty, I think that could be any score. I'll be amazed if we get a draw even, but I think City could seriously put us to the sword.
Yeah, I think we can still beat Forest. We have beaten them once this season. We did lose to them recently, though. And maybe this FA Cup will be the kind of thing that saves Erik ten Hag. It was the thing that saved Alex Ferguson many years ago when he was towards the chop. The City game is going to be difficult. I mean, we can't be lining up at left. If Lindelof is playing left-back versus Manchester City, then I don't know. We've got no chance. I mean, the thing is, we have no other options. I've seen people on Red Cafe saying, you know, there must be somebody from the youth team, but there isn't.
No,
we sent
there.
All our youth out on loan. Alvaro Fernandez, Brandon Williams, Ethan Laird, even other ones like Jurado, they've all gone. So there's literally nobody from the youth team who's going to play this position. The only other options that are thrown out there is Amrabat did obviously play there earlier in the season. I think he did a better job than Lindelof, even if it was not a great job. So I'd maybe look at putting him back there. I know he's a wild card. A lot of people have been saying, why can't Antony play fullback? Because he's better at kind of defending than he is at attacking. It's not a crazy solution, but I'd be surprised if we kind of saw that happening at this point all of a sudden, and definitely not at the Etihad. But yeah, this is the problem we have. You know, two or three injuries, and as I say, when you're down to one fullback, no strikers, then yeah, what hope do you have really?
Yeah, especially the problem is as well, I know they've only won by one recently a couple of times, but Foden's been excellent this season. Haaland just seems to turn up when he's playing against us. They've got De Bruyne back.
And they've been slowly, that's the big difference. They've been slowly bringing De Bruyne in. He's not even started a couple of the last games.
No.
They're just giving him 15, 20 minutes. Whereas us, as soon as somebody like Luke Shaw, Martinez is fit, they're thrown straight back in there because we're so desperate for them. Whereas, you know, City have the luxury to say, yeah, well, you can play 10, 15 minutes and we'll slowly build you up. But we don't have that luxury. They get thrown in and then 2 weeks later they're injured again. But look, I still think we can get a win against Forest, and I'm still sticking with my draw at the Etihad. I'm sticking with it. And yeah,
I hope so. That would be good, yeah.
Look, early in the season, we managed to get a draw at Anfield when people weren't expecting much. So, yeah, Ten Hag did show he can go pragmatic if need be. And, yeah, but a lot there depends as well. I don't know if Casemiro is totally fit where he's at. You know, he went out with some kind of head knock. Hopefully he's okay. But, yeah, we need these kind of experienced players in that game. We will come back to you after that City game. I think that's probably about it for our round out for this week. As I said, it's unlucky for you, Jamie. We've had a few positive ones recently. You turned up for the sad one again, but exactly. We'll try and get you back on after a win.
Next time, yeah.
Yeah, good to have you back on anyway. As I said, I think we've tried to get a bit more of the guys on rotation. We had Ushwin the other day, you now, to hear some different voices and different opinions. We'll go down the list soon. I want to give a shout out. We had a few new Patreons this week, so thanks to you guys for supporting the podcast. Anyone else who's interested, go and check us out on Patreon, and you can join our match day chat over on Discord. We always have a bit of fun on there, chatting with all the fans over there. If you haven't got that link, send us an email via Patreon and you can come and get involved in the match day. That is it from us for now. We will see you on the next one, which will be after the Manchester Derby. Good night from me.
Night, troops.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.